swim, bike and run, and anything else in the world of sport that tickles your fancy. But in this week's episode, we're looking at not just cycling, we're looking at a particular race. It's our Tour of Flanders special edition. The Tour of Flanders is one of the top five monuments in the world of cycling, and this is the second of those five, the first one being Milan-San Remo. But with me on the line from the US is Aaron, who's just as pumped about the Tour of Flanders, and there's been a lot of other action that's been happening in the last couple of weeks as well, hasn't there, Aaron? Some good, but some not so good.
No, you're exactly right, Rupe, and it's great to be on the show. Unfortunately, under what has been a very sorrowful 7 days here, past week in the world of pro cycling.
Yeah, well, we'll be talking about a bit more about that in later on in the show. Well, actually, probably very early on the show after our first little piece of music, because we are talking about the deaths in Belgium of two cyclists, which came just within days after the terrorist bombings that went on in Brussels as well. So with this weekend, with the world of cycling looking towards Flanders, and the heartland of cycling is there, and just kilometres away was Brussels. About a 45-minute drive, where they're still coming to terms with all the tragic fallout of the bombings in Brussels. But also, there's going to be a lot of interesting stuff in this week's show. Though we're going to be having an interview as our special guest interview is a Belgian and a guy who does love his classics, Hendrik Redant, who's the general manager / director sportif of the United Healthcare Pro Cycling Team in the US. We're going to talk to Hendrik about what's it like being a Belgian and what makes the Belgian classic so special. And later on the show, we're also going to talk about his United Healthcare team and how they're sort of steering towards their upcoming races in the US, which I know, Aaron, you're going to be there in a couple of those races, the Joe Martin stage race. It'll be interesting to see how United Healthcare go there. So we're going to talk to Hendrik about all that. And, of course, we're going to talk about the very first of the classics, Milan-San Remo, and some of the races since then, which are going to act as a bit of a form guide to what we may be able to expect on Sunday in the Tour of Flanders. Aaron, just a quick little brief about how your last couple of days, or the last week, has been since we've spoken to you, and how are you feeling about Flanders?
Well, I'm very excited about Flanders. I think more so because obviously we're looking at what is assured to be the final matchup between two of the races and the sport's greatest, and Tom Boonen and Fabian Cancellara, Rupe.
Yeah, that will be an interesting matchup. I mean, unfortunately, Tom Boonen's had to deal with a lot of injuries in recent years, but Cancellara seems to be in very good form, and it'll be interesting to see how Boonen can sort of step up to the challenge. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on Boonen. You know, he's won this race before, so it's, and there's a lot of pressure on a Belgian to match the expectations that will be in him.
And of course, you're mentioning the most recent crash and ill effects from a crash back at Abu Dhabi last year, I believe. But of course, Gregor Brown wrote a nice little piece in Velo News earlier this week talking about Boonen not being what he used to be.
Yeah, that's interesting, because, you only need to lose that little extra 1% of whether it's desire or form or ability, for whatever circumstances are, and that converts into, a major difference come race time. But hopefully, I hope Tom Boonen has a great race. I'm looking forward to seeing Cancellara also see what he can do as well. I mean, it's the Tour of Flanders. It's my favourite classic of the monuments. I set it apart from Paris-Roubaix. I know Paris-Roubaix is very popular around the world, and that's coming up next week. But for me, the Tour of Flanders is really special because of the type of course it is, with the bergs, those hills. It's got cobblestones. It's got the crosswinds. And just the mood of the Belgian people when they get behind the Tour of Flanders. It is something different than Paris-Roubaix, and I'll have to try and come to find find the words during the show to actually sort of identify what that is. But there is a mood or ambience of the Tour of Flanders which sets it apart. And, you know, whereas Paris-Roubaix is sort of like the crazy circus. It's a bit like what the Tour de France is to Grand Tour racing. You know, the Tour de France is special for its own reasons, and so is Paris-Roubaix. But the Tour of Flanders, you're going to such a heartland of cycling and Belgium, which is just obviously recently, you know, dealing with tragedy, but also historically it's dealt with so much tragedy with world wars and all that. But we won't get too somber and melancholy right now, Aaron. Hey, mate, do you reckon you can just sort to dip into your LP player collection and just find us a nice bit of maybe a bit of music to sort of maybe uplift the mood? We've got a good show coming up, and I think we should get into some classic gear. So you just look into your little collection there and come up with something nice for us.
As you walk on by.
Welcome back to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. A nice little selection there, Aaron, of music, fitting for the occasion of what this edition of What a Ride is, the Tour of Flanders special edition. The Tour of Flanders is the second of the top five monuments in world cycling, and it's on Sunday. And as we were saying, Aaron, you know, we won't labour too much on the tragedy that sort of, it's, well, not sort of, it definitely has struck Belgium in the last week or so with the bombings in Brussels, where I actually lived there for 4 years myself, and got a lot of friends there. And obviously the deaths, unfortunately, have to use the plural word, of two Belgian riders, Antoine Demoitier and Dan Minango. Different circumstances. Antoine Demoitier, succumbed to injuries after being struck by a motorbike in the race of Gent-Wevelgem. And Dan Minango, he died of a heart attack sustained after he stopped during the Criterium International race in France. And his life support system was taken off when he was in hospital. Obviously, Aaron, I don't know how, I guess your emotions have been running high when you sort of follow that news. And we're not in Belgium, you're in the States, I'm in Australia, but it's still, if you're a lover of cycling and a lover of Belgium, you can't help but be sort of, it does affect us all, doesn't it?
Well, it does, Rupe. You mentioned that how, you know, your past connections as far as living in Europe and living in Belgium, and obviously you can't be in this sport and cover this sport as a journalist or being involved in the sport as a cyclist or a domestique or a soigneur or anyone involved in the sport, an official, and not have some sort of connection to the European races and the Europeans alone. Obviously, we know a lot of people who live in Belgium now that use that airport not just for transport to these races through the Spring Classics, but use that airport to call home as well. Several people, obviously, I'm sure like you, was glued to social media and the Twitter trying to find updates from any of the people that we do come across and that we do know and have great solid relationships with in the business, our colleagues, to make sure that they were indeed okay. You did mention, I think, that the death toll now 35 is an absolute tragedy, but even more so than just a few days later with the deaths of Antoine and Dan. Dan just being, I think, 22 years old, and neo-pro, and then, a pro-continental rider, but with Roubaix Lille Metropole, and then, of course, Antoine being just 25 years old with the Wanty Group. A colleague of mine over at Eurosport, Jose Bean, she's the media officer for Wanty Group, so my heart goes out to her, because obviously her job was very taxing this week, for sure.
Yeah, I was in touch with Jose, and I just sort of sent her a private note, just saying how well I thought she handled the situation, bearing in mind she would have been suffering as well. At the same time, she's had to sort of be the center point for media calls and all that. And we saw when the story broke of how quickly social media was to, I guess it's people on social media trying to find out what's happened. People say things not always correctly. The misinformation does go out there very quickly, as we know, Aaron. And I thought it would have been an awfully hard situation for anybody to be able to handle that. And I just thought the team from Jose and also to the rest of the team, Wanty Group, Gobert, they really handled themselves remarkably well in such trying circumstances. And, I guess it's the nature of the beast, but you just, once misinformation goes out there on social media, you can't, it's just like a bushfire, isn't it? How do you stop it? Well, I guess you do stop it, finally, but not before long. There's been so much misinformation out there that there's a lot of cleaning up to be done.
Well, there's a lot of tensions high at the moment anyway, as we mentioned with the Belgian bombings. Obviously, there's a highly contested political race here in the U.S., and there are tensions there. There are tensions in both Australia and the U.S. at the moment. I've known in the past week several hit and runs that involved deaths to cyclists and motorists on the road. People just literally out for fitness or just enjoying a commute to work. So there's the tensions are high and have been at a high high level for quite some time. I did enjoy reading a story from Shane Stokes earlier today on cycling tips. He interviewed photographer, cycling journalist, photojournalist Christophe Ramon. Had a chat with him, and it was about a 30-minute audio interview embedded with the story, and gave their thoughts on the incident and what is being done as far as the right way by the UCI and what things they believe maybe could be changed. But it was all for the positive. And again, there's been no from the team's perspective or from Christophe or a lot of the journalists that are aware of the information that's out there, there hasn't been any blame on the moto pilot as such, and he did everything he could to avoid the incident.
Yeah, that's what my understanding was too, Aaron. And I think it's important at this like from the outset, but particularly now that there's been some sensibility or some reason calls been made, and there's things not sort of calmed down a little bit with this clearer head about how to handle everything. And I just hope that rather than finger pointing at the moment, it's just basically the investigation to continue and to find out exactly what happened, and that. As long as the sport or people can learn from it. I mean, finger pointing at this point of time is I understand when emotions run high, riders, they've been for so long concerned about accidents with motorbikes, but this particular case, I think all these cases you have to deal with in a one-on-one situation as to what's happened and find out exactly what happened before you start attributing blame to anybody or any circumstance.
And Rupert, I think it should, it's one of the things to be aware of. There are literally hundreds of bike races, professional bike races, men's and women's, every single year. Hundreds. And there are literally hundreds of riders and officials out on the road at any one given time during those races, of sometimes, more often than not, of 100 kilometers or more. So the incidents are really quite infrequent. It's just that when they do happen, obviously, it can be a very dangerous situation and often life-threatening. But I think as a whole, the sport does a great job. I think the sport has done an amazing job on a lot of levels as of late to make it a safer sport, to make it a cleaner sport. And, instead of attacking the UCI at the moment, I'm gonna just tip my hat to the guys and hope they continue to do a great job and that they can put this past tragedy behind them. And as Marcel Kittel, the German sprinter, said this week in an open letter that was highly publicized, one statement that really what was a very well written letter. One statement, one sentence truly, it rang true for me, and perhaps it did for you as well, Ruth, but his words were, "We need to work together to keep this sport safe and give sense to this tragic death." And I think that's something that we can move forward with.
Exactly. Well, look, Aaron, that's probably a good point for us all to move forward. Marcel Kittel, yeah, he certainly he was one of the voices of reason, I think, that really stood out, and I think it was poignant that it came from somebody within the peloton as well. I'm sure on your behalf as well, Aaron, that we wish Antoine Dumoutier, his team, family, friends, and the rest of the peloton all the very best, particularly in the next weeks and months, and if not years, as they come back to deal with this tragedy. But likewise for Dan Mingus, obviously his passing was a tragedy, and at the age of 22, it's just awful, isn't it? But likewise for him and his team and family and friends, on behalf of What a Ride, we wish them all the very best. And I guess we usually say this at the end of the show, Aaron, but maybe to the peloton, hope you all stay safe out there for the rest of the season and everything. So I think that's probably a fitting moment, mate. I think can you get your little pinkies and fingers ready to find some music again, because we're going to come back after this bit of music and we're going to rip into the Tour of Flanders. What a ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. This is our special Tour of Flanders edition, and we're just about to rip into, kick up a gear to talk about the Tour of Flanders after, understandably, sort of somber start to the show, which has been a really hard week for Belgium and all of cycling's fans, if not sports fans, and actually Belgians, with the tragedy of the bombings in Brussels. But anyway, we're now going to, in this segment of the show, we're going to talk about the actual race. Now, the Tour of Flanders, as I've said, is the second of the top five monuments in world cycling for one-day classics, and it's my personal favourite of the five. Aaron, I don't know, what's your personal favourite of the five monuments?
Oh, you know what, I'm going to go Liège-Bastogne-Liège, and I think for the simple reason, I just love what Simon Gerrans has been able to do there. And it's always been an exciting race. But no, I think Tour of Flanders, as you mentioned, it raced right up there. And probably more so, like you said, Paris-Roubaix gets all the pomp and circumstance, and Tour of Flanders is a little bit of the stepchild, so to speak. But there's a lot of passion there, and there's a lot of purity of the sport in this race. And I kind of liken to what you said earlier about Tour de France, whereas I like the Giro just a little bit more.
Yeah. But what I love about Tour of Flanders, I guess it was when I first went over to Europe in 1987, it was the very first classic I went to after about 10 days of being there, and I didn't know what was going on. I was just in a press car going up and down, left and right, over cobblestones and up these bergs, and just seeing the people, the Belgians on the side of the road. You could see how much this race meant to them and how they call it the Belgian World Championship, and then talking to riders afterwards, and I've written a piece piece for Cycling News on Australia's lineage with the Tour of Flanders. I mean, an Australian's never won it yet, but that very first race I went to at the finish, I went to see Phil Anderson, who was pretty peeved off that he hadn't got the result, but he and the Panasonic team didn't really have any results, and Phil just said, "Oh, look, just go up the road to Alan Piper's house," which was only 400 metres from the finish line then, and that's where the Panasonic team were staying, actually, just to sort of shower. And this is before we had buses in the sport, you know. So I just went up to Alan's house, and Alan, who is now high performance director at BMC, he sat me down. I was sitting in his kitchen, and he just went. He just explained to me how the race unfolded, because I knew nothing about what had happened. And I still remember Peter Post, who was the boss of the Panasonic team. He was stomping around the house. He was furious that the team hadn't won and everything, hadn't even gotten to the result. Although Alan did get into he got 10th in that year's race, but you know, they wanted a win, and the look on all the Belgian riders in this albeit Dutch team, that they had sort of failed their mission, and in which is their biggest race of the year, one day race, and here I was just sitting amongst all this, you know, and it was kind of bizarre, but it was it still left an impression with me as to how much this race means, not to the fans but to the riders, and just to see them there absolutely exhausted after about 275 k's of torrid racing, it really just sort of it blew me away, really, and it's left a lifelong impression.
Well, you know, this race is the longest uninterrupted of the Spring Classics, dating back to 1913. It did have a brief hiatus during World War I, but started back up in 1919 and has gone continuously since. I believe it's six riders, seven riders, or six men, I believe, hold three wins each to tie for first, with two of those guys being Boonen and Cancellara, as we mentioned earlier. Like I said, each of them have three wins each. And, of course, then those guys have some Paris-Roubaix wins, a few Paris-Roubaix wins themselves there too, don't they, Ruud?
Yeah, they certainly do. They certainly do. They're not bad at their job. and also we should say this year's Tour of Flanders is the 100th edition. So it's a real historical moment.
No, it really is. And I tell you, I'm quite excited to see one Greg Van Avermaet and see how he can, you know, continue his what has seemed to be a bit of a hot hand the last two seasons now. Most obviously, this one being the hottest here in the Spring Classics. Greg's done an amazing job with BMC.
Yeah, certainly has. He's really come of age, hasn't he, in the last few years? And I think another interesting thing is going to play a role in this year's race. You know, it's easy to come up with all your favourites and who you think will win and all that. But I was just reading some stories today about how, you know, with the advent of really bad weather in Paris-Nice and Tirreno Adriatico, before Milan-San Remo was on, how a lot of the riders, after they finished their races, they became really, really sick. And, you know, like the Cannondale team at Gent-Wevelgem, they didn't get any of their riders to the finish line. And as we speak now, the 3 days of Dipana is still one stage to go, but they've lost a bunch of their riders in that race. And they're not the only team. I'm just using it as an example. But there's a lot of riders who are in poor health because of the snowy and wet conditions that they've already had to race through. So, you know, it could be Tour of Flanders, the strongest rider usually always wins, but certainly I don't think anybody who's going to be feeling poorly at the start are really going to be in the fray at the end.
Well, you have to also be looking at the defending champion, Alexander Kristoff, and of course Peter Sagan as well, the reigning world champion, who finally got the rainbow curse off his back this week.
Oh yeah, I mean that was a relief for all. You know, I saw Gregor Brown did a interview with his sports director, and the guy was pretty relieved, and which you can imagine he would be. But saying that, he made an interesting point. He said, "Well, how will you know?" Gregor asked him, "How would he be now?" And he says, "Well, no, he'll be just the same. The start of the next race, he'll be just as anxious and keen to try and win the race, and he'll race to win. He never, you know, races just for training." And but I think everyone was happy to see that, and the world champion's jersey always looks best as the rider crosses the line with his arms aloft.
Absolutely. Now, Sagan, correct me if I'm wrong. Now, he finished on the podium in 2013 behind Cancellara.
Yes, I believe that's correct.
So how do you rate his chances, Ruth?
Sagan, look, I think for Sagan, I'd say he's obviously got very good form. I hope he can use his nous as he did to win Gent-Wevelgem, because I think there's one critique, you know, I'm not bagging him, definitely not, but if there's one critique, I'd say that hopefully he's learned from experiences, you know, he's perhaps raced too hard when he's been in breakaways, you know, and he's got to think smarter. We saw in the Tour de France last year, I think he got like 5 or 6 seconds in the Tour de France, and some of the riders would say, geez, he is a very popular rider in the peloton, and he's very highly respected, and obviously winning the world championship as he did, you know, he's the strongest guy there. And I think it's probably more out of frustration to see a guy with so much strength and charisma and panache, but that just tweak, you know, his racing sense a little bit better, and he could have probably converted a lot of those seconds into firsts. But hopefully now he's got his head around that, and hopefully over a longer distance he can keep his head around that, if that makes sense, because a lot of people forget the difference in the distance between Gent-Wevelgem and Tour of Flanders, that extra sort of 50 k's or so, that makes a massive, takes an extra toll on you mentally as much as physically, particularly if you're going to be in the frame to try and win the race.
Well, you know, we talked about Fabian Cancellara, and we talked about this being his last, and then Tom Boonen not being the Tom Boonen as of years past, largely due to injury from crashes. It just goes to show you got to relish these moments when you see the true legends and the greats riding, don't you, Rube?
Oh, for sure, for sure. That's why, you know, I mean, I would love to have been there in Flanders this year to watch it, but certainly it makes for great television viewing. And I would actually recommend anybody who, if they ever want to go on a cycling trip, though, you know, a lot of people go to the Tour de France, and then now a lot of people are talking about going to the Tour of Italy. But really, treat yourself to 2 weeks of the Flemish classics, the Tour of Flanders and Paris-Roubaix. I mean, you can stay in one spot for those 2 weeks. You know, you've got like every second day there's some big race on somewhere, and in between you can go do your own riding, some beautiful riding around the canals of Flanders. You've got a rich, rich history there. As I said before, early in the show, okay, a lot of us to do with the war, but it's just a beautiful area of the world, and I think you know, if I had a choice, I would to go on a cycling trip, I would choose 2 weeks for the Flemish Classics fortnight.
Fantastic.
Well, now, enough about, I guess we keep talking, I mean, people are pretty sick of hearing an American and an Australian bang on about the Tour of Flanders. I reckon there's nothing better than to speak to somebody, a real Belgian. Fancy that, Aaron. Do you reckon we could get a Belgian on this show?
Oh, where are we going to find a Belgian in this show?
Hold on. Hey, Hendrik, I found a Belgian. He's with us right here. He's with us right here. Aaron, get your fingers ready. Find some music, because after the break, we're going to speak to a real live Belgian called Hendrik Redant. And he was a great rider in his day, and he's the general manager and head sports director of the United Healthcare Pro Cycling Team, an American team, who have some high ambitions for the future. But first up in this interview, after the break, we're going to talk to Hendrik Redant about what it means to be a Belgian and what makes the Belgian Classics so special. Join us after the break on What a Ride.
More, and every gambler knows that to lose
Guinness and Aaron S. Lee for our special Tour of Flanders edition. Now, as I said just before the break and that little bit of music, we're going to speak to a real-life Belgian, Hendrik Rigdant. Now, Hendrik is a former cyclist himself, and he is Belgian, and he loves the classics. And I caught up with Hendrik during the Tour of Langkawi, where he was taking his team, the United Healthcare Pro Cycling Team, an American team, onwards and upwards. And they had a terrific campaign in Malaysia, but he's going to talk to us about that later in the show. But for this segment, we spoke to Hendrik about what makes this classic so special for a Belgian, and what makes them so hard, and just a bit about the mood of what it would be like to be there if we were there. But enough of me. Let's listen to Hendrik Rigdant. Well, I'm standing here with Hendrik Rigdant, the general manager of the United Healthcare Pro Cycling Team at the last stage of the Tour de Langkawi. Hendrik, we're here, the last stage. Just first up, before we talk about the upcoming spring classics for the cycling season, just a quick word about how you feel that your team has done in this year's race, albeit there is still one stage to go.
Indeed, still one stage to go, but I think till now we really did good, really good indeed. We had a stage win. At this moment, we're still first in general for the teams. We have a second place in general individual. Two, three times we have been elected as most aggressive riders, so that means our team really ride well, and they ride with aggression and with spirit, and that's what I like. So let's hope we can defend all these things that I just named today, because that's going to be the important thing. The race is only done by the finish line.
It's a big shopping list, isn't it? If my wife told me to go out there and buy all those things, I'd probably only come back with one of them, if any of them.
Well, yeah, that's true. At least we have to keep one focus on one, but we try to get them all as it is possible, and that will be a big achievement.
Now, obviously, this success, and also your great rides in the Herald Sun Tour, it's been a long tour for you guys. You're going to be focusing on the American calendar, and I guess with Tour of California coming up. But Hendrik, with you being Belgian, I'm sure you're going to keep one eye, if not two, possibly at time to time, on the big classics coming up over in Europe. As a Belgian and as a former professional cyclist who rode them, what do the classics mean?
Well, they mean a lot, of course. You know, already I've been watching over the weekend already the first opening race in Belgium, the second day. So I've been staying up all night. So that means it means a lot to me already, as I'm Belgian and I know these classics. I've been riding them. But it's a real big thing. And surely you have those legends like Tour of of Flanders, Paris-Roubaix, coming up in, let's say, a month. And I know all these guys are preparing really mentally, physically, up towards these races. And it's so special. It's if you win one of those, you're going to the gallery of the great ones, and you'll be in every museum, let's say. But it's so special racing. The spirit of it is, it's all of it. Here, look, there's a lot of people here, but nobody really knows what cycling is all about. They don't know tactics. They don't know how it works. In Belgium, you have the public that's there are all the cycle fanatics from the country itself, but a lot of people that know what cycling is and what it is. They know when there is a mistake made. They know when a rider has to attack. They know when there is wind to come and they have to shelter up. But, you know, that all that little things together that make it such a big race and such a nice and big ambience.
Now, I know that you won Paris Tours, which is the autumn classic, and I remember I wrote a report for Cycling News, Cycling Weekly, on your victory there. But did you have a favourite classic that for you was the one that you lived and breathed and woke up every morning, even as a kid, dreaming to win, and even as a professional, trying to win or hoping to win?
Yeah, that's true. Look, I lived on the parcours of Tour of Flanders, but my real big dream was winning or racing Paris-Roubaix. The first year I was in the front with the professionals and I crashed at about 15 kilometers to go, and the year I could win it, I punctured with 10 to go. But that was the race I was always living to. It's really a legend. I wanted to win that race. I tried 11 times and I didn't win it. I could have won it one, but I was bad luck, so that's racing. But indeed, for me, the real legend is Paris-Roubaix. It's such a hard race. It's nothing to do with climbing. It's all with positioning, with cursing at each other, with crashes, with all these things that can happen in a race. But I loved it. It's typical something for the hard guys, and I counted myself to that one. And you know, still, when I'm there at the start, we were there at the start with our boys last year, and I know they were not that experienced as for instance I was, or a lot of guys like Musay, I just say something, but still, that was awesome to be at the start and trying to get as fast as possible. But that's really a legend. I love that one.
Here with United Healthcare Pro Cycling, I mean, obviously, with it being Pro Conti, and it's not on your program to do these classics, but would you like for this team to develop to World Tour and to be able to steer them into a classics campaign, into a major classics campaign?
Oh, yes. Yeah. We'll be working on that already for several years now. It's all about the money, of course. In a Pro Tour team, you need quite some budget, and at this point, we're looking still for some sponsorings and sponsors, and so let's hope that all comes together. But indeed, our aim is to go on the big World Tour level and riding all those classics. We already last year, we had some we did Paris-Roubaix, we did Lombardy, races like that. So, but of course, doing the whole set of program, the whole World Tour races, will be something awesome. I know the South Africans aimed high, and they're now in there, and they ride like really well for that. So, but that's one of our goals as well. But we'll see. But I would love to take these guys up to there. They already could taste a few races. We have been doing the Europe program over the last 4 years, and it's not, of course, the real top classics, but still there. We have nice races and hard races, so they tasted how it is, and that ambience, that stress, that victory minded public. So, yeah, that's our goal.
One last question. Look, obviously for the classics, you know, you have certain riders who are suited for certain races, like you get certain guys for Roubaix and Flanders and the other guys for the Ardennes classics. But for when you focus on one of those two blocks, I guess if you win one of those classics, you feel great the next day. Maybe a little bit tired, but you feel great. Now, for the guys who don't win, what's the physical and emotional toll on you? How do you feel the next day?
You feel terrible. Also, if you win after Paris-Roubaix, look, after Tour of Flanders, Paris-Roubaix, you feel after another race like a Flèche Wallonne, so it's different. It's less demanding of the body. But one of those Belgian classic races with all the cobblestones and those steep, really hard hills, it's some attack on your body. But just to tell you, like about 2 years ago, we did Paris-Roubaix with guys that were really completely inexperienced, with material that was at that time limited to do it. And I know I passed my first rider after 130 kilometers, the second one after 165, but they all finished because they wanted to finish. And we were one of the only teams that finished with all 8 riders. I was so proud on that, because I know that for them it was really something special. But that spirit about, I want to finish Paris-Roubaix, that was there, and I loved that. And we we had so many punctures and we were so having bad luck, but still all our guys were there, and it made me really feel proud, because that means that those guys know what it means to race a Paris-Roubaix, to race it to the finish, and not only just to know the parcours. You can always go on the cobbles anyway, whatever you want, but in that race it's an honor to do it, and I loved that attitude that they had. So let's go for a better, even stronger team, and let's go for an aim for a bit.
Well, I think that performance there in Paris-Roubaix by the team sort of reflects the culture of the team which you've brought in. I think that's a great thing for the future. I think we've seen a lot of that today in this Tour de Lancarie as well. Hendrik Redang, thank you very much, and congratulations on everything you've done. You've got a great team, a really exciting program going, and I wish you all the best for the future.
Thank you. Thank you very much, everyone.
Welcome back to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. Well, Aaron, that was a pretty insightful sort of talk. You know Hendrik pretty well, Hendrik Redant, we just spoke to. He's always an interesting guy to talk to, isn't he, with his insights? He always leaves you with something to go away with having learnt.
Yeah, I tell you what, I can't say enough good things about Hendrik. Again, as I said on the last week's show, when we teased the interview coming up this week, I shared some great moments with Hendrik, and I think it was either Langkawi or Korea last year. I can't remember. It was in the Asia Tour, and it was a great time. It might have been both of them. I'm not sure.
Oh dear, we better put the bleep on there, do
we? Yeah, I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay, all right. Well, look, hey, before we get too far ahead of ourselves, obviously coming into the Tour of Flanders, you know, like I said, this is the second of the five monuments, the first being Milan-San Remo, which has been won and lost depending on whose side you are with. And leading into that, we had races like Paris-Nice, Tirreno-Adriatico, and since then we've also had the Tour of Catalunya, which the whole thing shows how much racing there is in a European calendar. And while the riders we see racing in the Tour of Flanders have raced in a lot of those events I just mentioned, not all the big stars of world cycling will be there on Sunday, will they? For example, guys like Richie Porte, Chris Froome, Vincenzo Nibali, they're sort of guys who are looking towards the Tour de France and they love the mountains. We may see some of them in the Ardennes Classics in a couple of weeks' time, but was there anything you took from those races that sort of stood out that perhaps, you know, we might have glossed over for through Tour of Flanders fever?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things was I had Michael Matthews pinged pretty highly from Milan-San Remo, and of course he got caught up in a crash and made one courageous effort to get back to that finish line and fight for a podium. Of course, the winner, the Frenchman, Arnaud Démare, he obviously recovered from his crash in what looked like to be a case of towing, Rupe.
Yeah, well, we spoke about social media and how quickly info spreads like wildfire in social media, and that was a very interesting story, wasn't it? And I still think, you know, whatever was right or wrong, there's probably going to be a little bit of a stigma that hangs over his head or you know, whether that's fair or not. But it's interesting debate because I guess another, you know, sort of also created debate as to, you know, the technology and use of technology by race officials and how they can work with TV to sort of minimise or if not eliminate this sort of alleged activity going on. But it was a remarkable return to the fray, to the front of the peloton by him. And I guess, you know, I'd love to talk to some of the riders who are out there. I'm looking forward to, I'd love to speak to some people to find out exactly what did happen. There again, the UCI, in its wisdom or not, decided not to pursue it.
Well, Ruth, I'll tell you, another thing that caught my eye and my attention has been the performance of Alberto Contador over the last month and a half. Obviously with Algarve, Paris-Nice, and Catalunya, finishing on the podium in GC all three times, including second place at Paris-Nice and Catalunya.
Yeah, that was he's really racing everything, isn't he? I mean, you know, I'm glad he's not doing the Giro because I wouldn't think he'd have anything left by the Tour de France. But maybe that's why he is racing so aggressively now, because he's not doing the Giro this year. So he will have a break coming up before the Tour de France. And certainly he's an entertaining rider to watch race, isn't he? I think, what I also love about it, he's not just waiting for the stages that just suit him on paper. He's looking for opportunities, you know, just to gain seconds here here and there, and it's paying dividends for him.
No, absolutely. And I'll tell you another thing, and not to really harp back on Flanders, but you talk about avoiding it and kind of massaging your schedule to bring your form up to certain races. Heinrich Haufler, who decided not to defend his Australian National Road Championship this January, he's been named as obviously he finished, I believe, seventh at Milan-San Remo.
That's right.
And he is... And then he has been listed as kind of the go-to guy, the protected rider for Flanders and Roubaix coming up for IM Cycling.
Yeah, I think that was really encouraging to see his ride Milan-San Remo. And knowing Heinrich, he would have liked to have had a better place than seventh, but it just shows he was there in the mix. And the last time, you know, 2009, he was in the mix. He got pipped, as we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, by Cavendish for the win at Milan-San Remo. But then he rebounded and got two top 10 places. I think one of them might have been fourth in Tour of Flanders. But anyway, he was certainly in the top 10 of both Flanders and Roubaix on similar form. So who knows, maybe he's right in there with a chance, and he certainly has the hunger and passion for these races. He knows the course very well, and you know, I think he's you know, he would have got some confidence out of his Milan-San Remo performance. And as you said, if he's got that form, it'll also reinforce his conviction that he's made the right choice to train back here, or train over there in Europe, rather than sort of flog himself in the early Australian season.
No, absolutely. And of course, I mentioned one of my favorites for Flanders is obviously Greg Van Avermaet, the 30-year-old Belgian rider, BMC Racing. He's had a spectacular spring, as we mentioned. He won Torino, Adriatico. He won Omloop, and he finished in the top five at Milan-San Remo and the top 10 at Gent-Wevelgem.
Yep. Hey, and another little thing that sort of popped out of those races I mentioned, Tour of Catalunya. I thought it was interesting to see how Richie Porte and TJ Van Garderen raced together for the first time as teammates for BMC. They're going to have two more opportunities before the big one, the Tour de France in July. But, you know, okay, Richie dropped from third to fourth on the last day because Dan Martin managed to get up in an intermediate sprint, and everybody who knows Richie, you know, Richie doesn't, he hasn't got a sprint, but I think it was a reinforcement that Richie's on, you know, he's tracking very well with his eye on July. You know, he's got fourth, he had third in Paris-Nice, and two down under, what was it, second, third, or whatever. Anyway, he's been up there for three World Tour races now, all stage races. So I think he's going very well, and I thought it looked good to see TJ and Richie both race well and try and use their opportunities as they came up. TJ got fifth at Catalunya. Okay, it's easy to say that's the first race of the season. Is it a honeymoon period or not? If it is a honeymoon period, fine, you know. I mean, marriages last longer than the honeymoon, so mine did. So why can't their honeymoon last longer? Certainly we hope it gets into July and they can produce their best performances for each of themselves as much for the team.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Rube. And you know, you mentioned about Richie's performances. Yes, you're spot on. I mean, he did finish, obviously, he won stage five along the hill there at the Tour Down Under, and he finished second on GC, finished second in the mountains classification for what that's worth. But he also finished third at Paris-Nice, and then of course at fourth at Catalunya. He's for someone who's had some really good results, he's flying a bit under the radar this year.
Yeah, well, I think that's something that can work in his favour in a little way. I mean, can you imagine if he was winning these races as he was last year, all eyes and attention would be on him. And I think it's something that Richie's kind of aware of, to be honest, but I think that's a nice place to be. You know, there's other people who can carry the pressure and of expectation. And, you know, I think Richie's in a pretty good place in the world with himself privately, you know, and just that consistent form. And on top of that, I think he's got health with him? I mean, he got a bit sick from Paris-Nice as well, from the conditions, but I think many in the peloton did. But just his general overall health is tracking well, and that's just with the good racing he's getting in, and with the good health, and then the well-timed breaks in between races, I think it's just, you know, it all augurs really well for July. But I won't get my put the cart ahead of the horse, because I have a tendency to put the mocker on people. So I'm going to hold back a little bit, and I'm not going to talk about Richie Porte anymore on this show today.
Well, no, you've heard it here first. Richie Porte, Tour de France. River Guinness.
Look, we're going to take that opportunity now to have a break at Milan-San Remo. I'll regather my emotions, and then we'll come back after this nice little bit of music, as we're in full stride here in What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron Essley.
There's music and there's laughter. I don't know if I'm scared of dying, but I'm scared of living too fast, too slow. Regret, remorse, hold on. No, no, I gotta go. There's no starting over, no new beginnings. Time raises on. Just gotta keep on keeping on. Gotta keep on going, looking straight out on the road. Can't worry about what's behind you, what's coming for you further up the road. Try not to hold on to what is gone. I try to do right what is wrong. I try to keep on keeping on. Yeah, I just keep on keeping on. I hear a voice call, calling out for me. These shackles I made in an attempt to be free. Be it free. Comes with the bad. A song's never just sad. There's hope. There's a silver light. Show me my silver light. Show me my silver light. I hear a voice call, calling out for me. These shackles I made in the town to be free.
Guinness and Aaron Essley. Aaron and I were in the lead breakaway at the moment of this race, What a Ride, the latest episode, the Tour of Flanders special. But we're just going to turn left here, change of direction in the course. Very soon the United States calendar is going to be resuming with the Joe Martin stage race. And then we get to the Tour of Gila, then obviously the build-up to the Tour of California. Now our special guest for the show, Hendrik Redant, former Belgian cyclist, but now general manager and sports director of the United Healthcare team. They're sort of going to rebound, hopefully, or he hopes they will be, that his team will be at the Joe Martin stage race. At the Tour of Langkawi, they had a really successful race. They won a stage, they won the team's classification, they got second overall, and the whole team just rode really, really well. They finished that race up in feeling really good about themselves. And obviously, we spoke about to Hendrik earlier in the show about the classics and what does it mean for a Belgian and all that sort of stuff. But in this part of the interview, we spoke to Hendrik about his team, the team's ambitions, what they're looking for in the United States in their program, but also some of their vision for the future. Hendrik is keen, hopefully, for this team to become World Tour. Aaron, what's your feel about United Healthcare and what potential they have?
Well, they've got a lot of potential. They've got a lot of backing. It's one of the better financed United States Pro Continental licensed teams. Now they lost one of their top riders last year, or should I say this year, Kyle Rajan to Trek Factory Racing, who's enjoying his Neo Pro season with those guys. But they're a great team. I'm expecting some positive results from them this year, especially under the tutelage of Hendrik.
What do you think? I mean, Hendrik's a guy who's not. There's a little bit of Dave Sanders in Hendrik, I see. He was Victorian sports director and coach who at the Tour Down Under manages the UniSA Australia selection team. Obviously, that team is not. That's a national selection amateur team, and it's not a team of the status of this. But Dave Sanders has a sort of penchant to just tell his riders, just have a crack, go for it. Don't feel intimidated by riders who are supposedly in higher-ranked teams and whatever. Hendrik's a bit like that too, I think. He's a very encouraging way. He gets the best out of his riders, but he gets them to seize the opportunity rather than just sort of wait to be told.
Well, of course, that's kind of the style that Hendrik actually partook when he was a rider himself, wasn't it, Roof? I mean, a two-time KBK winner, a Perry Tours winner. I mean, he always just kind of had a crack. And even though he was a Belgian, always gave it a bit of that Aussie crack, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he did. And I think the essence of it, too, is like, I mean, the sport's such a hard sport. You've got to enjoy what you do, and like with any job, but just by having a crack, you have a go, and more often than not it doesn't work, but sometimes it does, and that's what makes success so enjoyable, because it is so rare for most riders in the peloton. But when it doesn't, you just take it on board, learn and so sort of absorb where you went right or wrong, and try and do it better the next time. But don't sort of labour too much in the potential, particularly for young riders who are coming through. I guess it could be easy to think, gee, I'm just bashing my head against a wall here. I'm not making any inroads at all. But, winning is a lot rarer thing than most people realise. Certainly when people are watching races, the old cliche, it all looks too easy, doesn't it, when it's going well. But when it's going bad, and we see a lot of that in cycling, gee, it looks horrible.
Well, we just, we talked about it earlier in the show. We're over 3 months into nearly 3 months into the racing season, and it was just this past week that the world champion was able to take his first win of the season. So it doesn't come easy. And the great thing about Hendrik is it's hard to see him without his trademark smile, Roop. He's always got a big grin on his face, and I think that positivity is very encouraging for a young pro squad like UHC, and I think it creates a great atmosphere for those guys to learn and then potentially grow to that next level. Always a great time spending a little bit of time with Hendrik, and I'm looking forward to this second part of the interview.
Well, let's do it. Let's listen to the man, the great man, Hendrik Redant. And the words behind, they come from the smiling face of this Belgian cycling legend. he would laugh if I said legend, because he would be saying, oh, no, this. And there are a lot of legends in Belgium. So, but anyway, he is a great person of cycling, a great personality. And here is Hendrik Redant talking about, showing some of his greater vision about where his team, United Healthcare Pro Cycling, can go to in the long-term future, but also in the short-term future, once the US racing scene gets into top gear again with the Joe Martin stage race coming up.
Oh, you won't hear a team, though, that's really
challenging.
It's possibly your best team, isn't
yep,
it?
Yep,
your
this is right. We have one of our best teams here. We sort of made of a mix with John Murphy, who won already a stage in Herald Center. We have Tanner Put and Tim Magner that real are there for the sprint. Yeah. And then with Johnny Clark, Jani Brajkovic and Daniel Caramillo, we have the three guys can play the game on Cameron Highlands.
Yeah.
And that's the plan, you know. So we are challenging the Guardini guys, let's say,
yeah,
as one of the sprints. It's not easy, of course, because, yeah, you see already Guardini wins another stage, and yesterday the guy from that dimension as well. But we're trying our best. We're doing our best. We have about five chances more to really win for a stage.
Yeah.
But our main goal is, of course, to win the overall, and we have three of our best climbers in this team.
Mm.
So I think we have one of our strongest team, if you see the race, compared to that. Yeah, I think so as well.
You know, for all the, say the World Tour teams who may not have brought their top team, but you've brought your top team. Is this the type of race, like a major important thing for your sponsors? And is Asia and the US a really important push for you guys?
Yeah.
You could have said this team to Europe or whatever.
Indeed, but I think we made a choice. It is indeed, our sponsor is mainly interested in America.
Mm.
So, and now I'm talking about California, Utah, and all those races,
yeah,
and whatever. So that's of course one of our biggest goals. But also, we have quite a few Asian sponsors, and I'm talking about the Shimano and the Maxxis. For that, it's important. So Tour de Langkawi has always been a good race to us.
Yeah.
Always been invited. We always bring a really good team. Tour de Taiwan, we're one of them as well.
Mm-hmm.
We love Australia, so that's why it's one of the best races I ever seen compared to Tour Down Under,
yeah,
Herald Center.
Yeah.
So I think it has been a challenge to bring already a good team over there. But indeed, it's more sponsor-wise that we're aiming more the American and the Asian market.
Yeah. And it's good to get that momentum. And the guys need to. At the end of the day, it's good that they can win or be in the race, isn't it? Rather than just get.
It's all about winning, mate. It's you know. Everybody gets a bit, you know, nervous and stressed, and then the victory comes and everybody's relaxed. You can feel that team is immediately de-stressed, let's say,
yeah,
and that's good. And then if you see that other guys or climbers do, Johnny did well in third on the outer seat, Tanner did a second place, you know, it's all about that momentum that goes on. You have a victory, everybody gets de-stressed, everybody gets relaxed, and you get more results out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you're always there, and you're fifth, and you're sixth, and you're ninth, and you're fourth, there's no victory, everybody gets more and more stressed, and it's more difficult to work. Once, it's a relief, and indeed, yeah, we're still aiming for that next victory, and that hopefully is this week.
Yeah, tomorrow's the camera in the Highlands.
Yep.
I mean, how do you see that the peloton will be looking at you guys?
Well, not only in all guys, there's a few of Astana also, like Lopez and so on, that will be really good.
Yeah.
I think the climb is not the same as Genting, that's for sure. In Genting, you really can make a difference. I think here still, it must be a very good rider if he wants to go alone.
Yeah.
If not, it's going to be a small group, and then it's still going to be decided over the race as well, as it's still about 5 days to race.
Yeah.
But indeed, I think my plan is to be one of the protagonists in the race.
Yeah,
it's normal when you have three really good climbers with you. So we're going to see and try to control the race till the climb and see what happens. But indeed, it's going to be a challenge. And there's a few other guys that I won't name their names, but that we still have to take care of. And at that time, maybe our advantage will be that we are not alone, and we have three guys normally in that group, and they can play the round. So we'll see.
Just lastly, for this year, what is your major goal for this year?
California is one of the major goals. We want to do really good there.
Mm-hmm.
We're competing against the best in the world over there.
Mm-hmm.
The race is always be high standard. I know I'm comparing a sportive way and don't talk about organization or whatever.
Yeah.
It is, but
indeed,
it's that's one of our main goals. It's big for the sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
So the real American races are really still there. Utah, Colorado. Well, Colorado this year, sadly enough, won't happen. But also like Gila, Joe Martin, and surely California will be one or over high. highlights indeed. Yeah.
The core of this team here was probably, this is your tour of California sort of core.
Well, yeah, it's going to be a mix of a few that did San Luis, did Oman and these guys. Mm. So we still have to, we're busy now observing and analyzing the stages as well. If it's only sprinters, I'm going to take my sprint team. If it's only climbing, I'm going to take, if not, we have to see which races are more suited for which guys.
Yeah.
And we're going to try to make out the best team of that. So we're still busy in analyzing that and trying to get our best team ready for that race. So, but at this point, I think everybody will have a group run till that date. So these guys have been racing Australia over here.
Yeah.
The others have been racing San Luis, Qatar, Oman.
Yeah.
And we will also have now Gila, Jumart in Turkey. So it's going to be really a perfect preparation towards California. And we will distillate our team from that group.
You mentioned about obviously Helsun too, where you got a stage win in the second and the third.
Yep.
You win in a bunch of sprint. You've got the second and third, and it was Arthur's seat.
Where Froome was outstanding.
Yeah. Does that sort of add that quality to those results because of the way that Froome and Sky race?
Yep.
They respected, because they could have just ridden around for training, couldn't they?
I must say, I told John Trevor as well, I said, well, you really have a good team here that makes your promotion for your race. And I'm talking now about those guys.
Yeah.
I said, we always try, but we must be honest, we're not on that level yet. But indeed, those guys could have come just for holiday. But that was not the case. They really controlled the race all day. And yeah, Froome won it. What do you want more? So at that point, I know we tried, but at that point, I told our boys, don't be afraid, don't let yourself intimidate, just go with the best, and you see where you end. And you see, Johnny was third, John was winning, and Tanner was second. So in a way, we had a really, really good race because all the rest was won by almost Sky. So at that point, I'm really glad, I'm really pleased that it was like that. And it was also fine to do that tactic of not intimidation, not leaving you intimidated, but just go for it. And that's what we're going to try as well tomorrow.
Well, you're listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. We were listening to Hendrik Redant, the general manager and sports director of the United Healthcare Pro Cycling Team. Actually, Aaron, it's just making me think in the break, Hendrik, I mean, we were talking earlier about how Hendrik is, we were talking about that sort of essence of just having a crack, get out there and have a try, backing yourself. And we're just staying off air then. I mean, remember how he was, he used to be the sports director on Lotto when Cadell Evans rode on that team. But he actually ended up leaving Lotto on his own volition to try and, or to join the doomed and failed Australian Pegasus project, the team that was going to hopefully try and join the World Tour, or then Pro Tour. But one of the interesting things that a lot of people may not realise is that Hendrik Redant actually paid out his own contract to take the risk to join what was hopefully going to be an Australian team, which was going to start before Orica Greenedge started. I mean, talk about backing yourself. That's really putting your name and your reputation and your life on, well, maybe not your life, but I mean, your certainly your reputation and your career on the line for a hunch, or maybe it was more than a hunch, but certainly it was something that didn't actually work because the Pegasus project failed.
But of course, looking back now, and of course the Australian Pegasus sports racing team did fail, but how instrumental was that project in perhaps really getting the ball rolling and ultimately getting an Orica Green Edge off the ground?
Well, I know that there'd been talk for some time before Pegasus started. I mean, I know Shane Bannon, even going back in 99 and 2000, they were keen to try and get a team going themselves. Not saying it was Orica Green Edge or Green Edge or Jerry Ryan then, but there certainly was a big push that came very close in 2003. Because I understand that at the time there was a very big, important meeting held in Sydney on the eve of the Rugby World Cup final between England and Australia, with the key parties that were close to coming to terms for Australia's first ever team. It fell over at the end. This is not Pegasus. This is just a precursor to Pegasus. But just shows that there was certainly various moves. And there was another move from Victoria. There was another push to try and create a team down there as well. So Pegasus wasn't really the first. And it certainly wasn't. Orica Green Edge is not the first Australian team either. In the book I'm writing on the history of Australian cycling, we've had several other other teams that have been Australian registered teams, but I don't want to, you know, go into all that right now. But so certainly there's been momentum and interest and attempts to get teams going, and for various reasons these, you know, projects, you know, some succeed, some don't, some get up, some don't even get up. So it shows that for a while, though, there has been a lot of interest, certainly.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm looking forward to seeing Hendrick and his new-look UHC team, some of the same guys that you had a chance to see in Langkawi, get a chance to see them at the Joe Martin stage race when the UCI Americas Tour, the 2016 season, returns to North American soil for a three-race stint, the Joe Martin stage race, followed by the Tour of the Gila in New Mexico, and then, of course, the Amgen Tour of California to close out May. So very excited to join up with him and perhaps have another beer. I think it's his shout.
Oh, you would say that, wouldn't you? Yeah. Hey, have you heard anything more over there in the States, Aaron, about, you know, obviously the Tour of Colorado, you know, isn't up this year. I mean, has there been any developments there as to any attempts to fill the void there or not, or do people just write that off the calendar?
Yeah, at the moment, Rube, the only news being that it will indeed return for the 2017 calendar, but not having that Tour of Colorado, the USA Pro Challenge, it's a big hit for North America. When, you know, we're fresh off hosting the UCI World Championships, the Road World Championships, and of course the continuing growth of California, of the Larry H. Miller Tour of Utah, the USA Pro Challenge was just another great example of the growth of cycling, pro cycling here, with the continental and pro continental teams having a place to go and race against the world's very best and gain that experience and also rub shoulders with the best and hopefully get a little bit of notice.
Yeah. And as we've seen, you know, those who are willing to dare, they can obviously, you know, get their names out there. And there's been a lot of riders we've seen who do some great things in these, say, smaller races. And before you know it, there they are over in Europe. Actually, Mr. Bevan, for example, that was a very nice article you wrote on him and his progress there at Cannondale. He's, I guess he's sort of put his, you know, the red alert out there now. People will be expecting him to back up his strong early season start at Paris-Nice with more performances, won't they? I understand he got a bit. He obviously got ill at Paris-Nice, but when he returns to the peloton, people will certainly be expecting more of him.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I remember seeing young Paddy Bevan. Of course, I say just 25 years of age and just turned it, but seeing him in Nowra at the Watts factory there with the Avanti racing team after he had just joined them after spending a year with the New Zealand track program and racing the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow. He had spent 4 years with the U.S. Registered Bissell racing team, the continental team there here in the U.S., and just to see him flower, to see him get on the bike and produce 500 watts for nearly 5 minutes was quite impressive, Rube. And the thing about Paddy Bevan is that he kind of, you know, he's not a pure sprinter. He can just do about a little bit of anything. And he's proven that in the off season he thought the biggest thing he needed to do going to the World Tour was develop his time trial skills. So he spent a lot of time in the off season doing just that, and of course that paid off in huge dividends by winning the New Zealand time trial championship back in January, but then placing on the podium at Paris-Nice in the prologue.
Well, that's great. That's great. Well, look, thumbs up to Paddy Bevan and all the best to him. How about we take a little bit of a break to get our breath back because we're coming into the finishing straight soon, Aaron, and we probably need to finish strongly. We're finishing this episode on a high, so let's contain it. Don't lose the plot, and we'll listen to a bit of music, and then we'll come back for the homeward straight, okay? You're listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron Essley.
Trying to smile, but the air is so heavy and dry.
Welcome back to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. We're nearly there. We can see the finish line in straight. We can see the finish line straight ahead. You can tell I'm getting ahead of myself here. But it's a jam-packed edition with so much racing. It's almost you start getting into it, then you realise there's this event and that event, these people. And I'm sure we've missed a lot as well. But we can't sit here all day and talk, can we, Aaron?
No, we can't. And obviously, we've got to get back to work and start researching and writing articles so that that we can share our thoughts and previews and wrap-ups for I guess, the masses around the world, hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, my friend. And my little final word, I mean, I'm going to ask you what your final little word is. But I noticed the Australian Drapac team, they're over in France at the moment, and they're going to kick off their European campaign on April 1. Just a day or two away. I'm really hoping that Bretton Jones can get up and get that so far elusive first win with him. He's been in the mix so many times, and Tour de Langkawi, he was really close there one day, and then he pulled his foot from the pedal. So I'm going to give Bretton Jones, BJ, a big thumbs up and all the best. All the way, BJ. Go for it, mate. And once you get that first win, the rest will come. Well, how about you, Aaron? What's your big sort of your final little word or hope for anybody out there?
Well, I'll tell you, my big, and by the way, I agree with your sentiments. I've been enjoying some of Bretton Jones' Facebook posts and Instagram posts from their days over in Europe, and it sounds very exciting. It was also good to see that the Avanti Isoway sports racing team, they were going to race, they were scheduled to race the Joe Martin stage race at the end of April, but they've had been forced to pull out due to prior commitments in Europe. So they'll be joining some of those guys over in Europe and getting a little bit of European racing under their belt. They've done a lot of racing over the past few years, obviously, you know, winning six NRS titles in I think about 7 years there in Australia, but also spending a lot of time in the Asia Tour. But it'll be good to see them cutting their teeth a little bit in Europe. Very excited to see the Ironman 70.3 return here in my native New Orleans. I don't have to go far. I could just walk out my front door to the press conference and to the start and finish line. So I'm very excited about that, Rue. And then also excited about trying to maybe catch it up with the new Triathlon Australia CEO, Miles Stewart, talking to him about his first 5 months on the job and seeing if I can get a little bit of a hint on who we might be looking at as the representatives on both the men's and women's side for the Olympics in Rio.
That's interesting. I look forward to listening to that. And actually, they just unveiled the Australian Olympic uniforms yesterday in Sydney at the Bondi Icebergs Club. And I'm not sure if you've seen it at all, Aaron. It's actually, I quite like it. It's a very nice, I'm not a fashionista, as some people may realise, so I'm not going to go into trying to describe exactly what style it is. But I give it the thumbs up, the uniform. It's. I'm looking forward to seeing the Australian team come out at the opening ceremony in Rio.
Well, I got to tell you, I saw the photos on social media yesterday, and I've got to tell you, I thought they were quite sharp as well. A bit of a throwback look, and it reminded me a little bit about a bit of a style cues from the Deep South here in the U.S., kind of what we call the seersucker design, the nice summery pinstripe. But I did notice our good friend and media group dinner club, our Christmas party dinner club colleague, Mike Tomolaris from SBS, I did notice that he had a bit of a dig about them maybe not being TV friendly because of the strobing effect that pinstripes give. Only Tomo would come up with that.
Oh dear, oh dear. Well, yeah, Tomo has issues, of course. I would like to have seen a little bit of a Hawaiian sort of flavour there, you know, a little floral area. But anyway, maybe that'll be for the next Olympics. You know, maybe one day I can get into a position of power and strength and decree that we have the Hawaiian look.
Yeah, let's pray that never happens, Rube.
Look, it's not going to happen. You know that. Anyway, my friend, look, it's been great sharing this time with you again on What a Ride. I'm Rupert Guinness, and we've been talking with Aaron Essley, and our special guest for this week's show, Hendrik Redant from Belgium. It's the Tour of Flanders coming up, one of the great, great races in world cycling, one of the great sporting events. If you haven't seen it, make sure you do. If you can't get out there to Flanders, get onto the TV, turn it on and watch it. It's on Sunday. It's a thrilling race, and it'll just show you everything that's great about cycling. What do you think, Aaron? Last word from you, mate.
Just especially in light of everything that's happened over the last 7 days and over the last few years in terms of cycling safety, just as a reminder, as we do every show, to keep it rubber side down and just enjoy the ride.
I couldn't have said it better, Aaron. You've just been listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron Essley. And remember, because Aaron forgot to say it, but a metre matters.
Lift me into shape.